وَمَا أَصَابَكُم مِّن مُّصِيبَةٍ فَبِمَا كَسَبَتْ أَيْدِيكُمْ وَيَعْفُو عَن كَثِيرٍ.
Whatever misfortune befalls you is a consequence of your own deeds, but much of it He forgives. Whatever misfortune befalls you is a consequence of your own deeds, but much of it He forgives. Let it be clear that this Quranic passage does not aim to explain the basic cause of all woes of mankind. What is said here is clearly addressed to those who are guilty of disbelief and disobedience in Mecca. They are being told that should God have taken them to task for their misdeeds, they would not have been left alive. They have, however, been afflicted with some calamities. The allusion is presumably to the famine which had then overtaken the Meccans. These calamities stand out as a warning. They should realize their utter helplessness in face of God against whom they had rebelled. Now can those whom they take as their patrons and lords avail them if God's wrath strikes them? As for true believers, they are governed by another set of divine laws. They too encounter hardships and calamities. These, however, expiate their sins and lapses. The Prophet, peace be upon him, said, "As to the sorrow, grief, suffering, and hardships afflicting a Muslim, even it be the pricking of a thorn, it serves as expiation for his lapses. God has devised this arrangement." As to the hardships which a believer faces in the cause of upholding the word of God, these are means for his exaltation. There is no basis to assume that these are indicative of God's punishment for his sins.
وَمَا أَنْتُمْ بِمُعْجِزِينَ فِي الْأَرْضِ وَمَا لَكُمْ مِنْ دُونِ اللَّهِ مِنْ وَلِيٍّ وَلَا نَصِيرٍ.
You cannot frustrate him in the earth. You have no protector nor helper against Allah.
وَمِنْ آيَاتِهِ الْجَوَارِ فِي الْبَحْرِ كَالْأَعْلَامِ.
And of his signs are the ships that sail in the sea like mountains.
إِنْ يَشَأْ يُسْكِنِ الرِّيحَ فَيَظْلَلْنَ رَوَاكِدَ عَلَىٰ ظَهْرِهِ إِنَّ فِي ذَلِكَ لَآيَاتٍ لِكُلِّ صَبَّارٍ شَكُورٍ.
If he so wills, he can cause the winds to become still so that they will remain motionless on its surface. Surely, there are many signs in this for those who are wont to be steadfast and give thanks.
If he so wills, he can cause the winds to become still so that they will remain motionless on its surface. Surely, there are many signs in this for those who are wont to be steadfast and give thanks.
Those who are wont to be steadfast and give thanks refers to those who exercise self-restraint and faithfully serve God both in the states of adversity and of prosperity, not to those who, by the very first flush of prosperity, lose their poise and allow themselves to forget their true position and become rebellious towards God and oppressive towards His creatures. Also, when they encounter adversity, they become utterly desperate and resort to all kinds of petty acts. Rather, it is those who give thanks to God, who attribute their success to Him, who never fail, no matter how high they ride on the crest of good fortune, to consider it all to be God's favor rather than the result of their inherent excellence. It is they who, when they find themselves in truly woeful conditions, their mind remains conscious of the blessings they have enjoyed rather than of the deprivations they may have suffered. Thus, such people continue to thank God both in adversity and prosperity, and do so both by their tongues and from their hearts.
أَوْ يُوبِقَهُنَّ بِمَا كَسَبُوا وَيَعْفُ عَنْ كَثِيرٍ.
He may, while forgiving much of the sins of those that ride these ships, drown them on account of some of their misdeeds.
وَيَعْلَمَ الَّذِينَ يُجَادِلُونَ فِي آيَاتِنَا مَا لَهُم مِّن مَّحِيصٍ.
Then those who wrangle about our signs will come to know that there is no escape for them.
Then those who wrangle about our signs will come to know that there is no escape for them.
As part of their trade journeys, the Quraysh visited Abyssinia and the coastal regions of Africa. They undertook these voyages and crossed the turbulent Red Sea on sailing ships and boats. Now, the Red Sea is very hazardous for navigation, especially because it is often stormy and also abounds in submarinous rocks with imperiled navigation. Thus, based on their experience, the Quraysh were in a good position to appreciate the state depicted here.
فَمَا أُوتِيتُم مِّن شَيْءٍ فَمَتَاعُ الْحَيَاةِ الدُّنْيَا وَمَا عِندَ اللَّهِ خَيْرٌ وَأَبْقَى لِلَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَلَى رَبِّهِمْ يَتَوَكَّلُونَ.
That which has been given to you is only the wherewithal of the transient life of this world. But that which is with Allah is better and more enduring for those who believe and put their trust in their Lord. That which has been given to you is only the wherewithal of the transient life of this world.
What has been given to man is the wherewithal of transient life, rather than something that ought to puff him up with pride and cause him to exult. Thus, no matter how abundant the riches of the world available to a person, they are still meager and transient. At the most, he will avail it for a number of years and will then leave it behind and go ahead empty-handed. Practically speaking, a man is able to avail only a tiny portion of his wealth, while most of the time it only adorns account books and ledgers. How wise is it to exult at possessing such wealth for a person who understands the reality and true worth of this wealth and, for that matter, of the world itself?
But that which is with Allah is better.
By contrast, the bounties of the hereafter are of an excellent nature, both qualitatively and quantitatively. Furthermore, they're not ephemeral, but everlasting.
And more enduring for those who believe and put their trust in their Lord.
To repose trust in God is stated here as an essential requisite of faith, as well as a necessary condition of success in the hereafter. Reposing trust in God means the following. 1. That one should completely confide in God's guidance and be fully cognizant that knowledge about reality, the principles of morality, the prescribed limits of what is lawful and what is unlawful, and the rules laid down to order and regulate human life are based on truth and lead to man's success and felicity. 2. Instead of trusting one's own ability and competence and resources or of any others than God, one should rely on God and be fully persuaded of the truth that success depends wholly upon God's help and support, which one can earn only by observing God's laws and by keeping one's eyes firmly fixed on seeking God's pleasure and working within the limits laid down by Him. 3. Likewise, one should have firm faith in God's promises made to those who believe and do good and devote themselves to the cause of truth rather than falsehood. While reposing faith in these promises, believers should spurn any gain which might accrue from following wrong paths. By the same token, they should patiently bear all losses and hardships which they may have to face in consequence of upholding the truth. Without such trust in God, one cannot obtain the glorious rewards which God has promised to believers.
وَالَّذِينَ يَجْتَنِبُونَ كَبَائِرَ الْإِثْمِ وَالْفَوَاحِشَ وَإِذَا مَا غَضِبُوا هُمْ يَغْفِرُونَ.
Who eschew grave sins and shameful deeds, and whenever they are angry, forgive. Who eschew grave sins and shameful deeds.
For further details, see Al-Nisa 4, note 53-4, Towards Understanding the Quran, Volume 2, pages 32-5, Al-An'am 6, note 130-1, Volume 2, pages 291-2, Al-Nahl 16, note 89, Volume 4, pages 358-9, and Al-Najm 53-32.
And whenever they are angry, forgive.
Believers are not easily enraged and irritated. Rather, they exercise restraint and are cool-minded. They are not revengeful either. Rather, they overlook the excesses committed by others and keep good control over their anger. This, according to the Quran, is one of the best traits of a human being. Al-Imran 3:134. It is projected as one of the main reasons for the Prophet's resounding success. Al-Imran 3:159. Aisha relates that the Prophet, peace be upon him, never took revenge on personal grounds. He enforced punishment only when some divine command was violated.
وَالَّذِينَ اسْتَجَابُوا لِرَبِّهِمْ وَأَقَامُوا الصَّلَاةَ وَأَمْرُهُمْ شُورَى بَيْنَهُمْ وَمِمَّا رَزَقْنَاهُمْ يُنْفِقُونَ
Who obey their Lord and establish prayer, who conduct their affairs by consultation, and spend out of what we have bestowed upon them.
Who obey their Lord, they respond wholeheartedly to God's call and are forthwith ready to attend to the tasks to which He invites them.
And establish prayer, who conduct their affairs by consultation.
That the believers establish prayers and conduct their affairs through consultation is highlighted as one of their excellent traits. The directive to conduct their affairs through consultation also occurs in Al-Imran 3:159. Little wonder, then, that mutual consultation is an important characteristic of Islamic polity. It only betrays a person's affinity to ignorance, jahiliyyah, if he were to insist on deciding collective issues without taking others into confidence. In fact, it also amounts to an infraction of the norm laid down by God. On studying why Islam places such emphasis on mutual consultation, the following three points stand out. 1. If one arbitrarily decides something which concerns others, it is tantamount to committing excesses against them, and no one has the right to act high-handedly in matters of common interest. Justice requires that all persons concerned with the matter should be consulted while taking a decision. If the issue relates to a very large number of people, their representatives should be taken into confidence. 2. Any person who acts arbitrarily on public issues and disdainfully disregards others does so either to serve his personal interests or out of arrogance. Both these traits are morally reprehensible. A true believer cannot possess either of them, for he is not so selfish as to usurp others' rights in order to appropriate for himself unlawful gains, nor is he so arrogant as to consider himself all-knowing and all-wise. 3. It is a huge responsibility to adjudge others' interests. A God-fearing person realizes the tremendous burden of his accountability to God. At times, he is deterred by this thought from accepting positions of responsibility. However, those negligent of God and the hereafter have the audacity to take up any assignment. A God-conscious person who is all along cognizant of the hereafter is bound to consult those who have an interest in the decision-making of a question, or at least consult their representatives. For this may help in arriving at a sound and just decision. Even if an inadvertent mistake is committed, any specific individual cannot be faulted on that count. These three considerations underlie the Islamic teachings with regard to mutual consultation as a requirement of Islam's broader ethical code of conduct. Any deviation from this norm is a major moral flaw which Islam does not condone. The Islamic way of life presupposes mutual consultation at every level, both minor and major. Domestic issues should be decided together by husband and wife, and as children come of age, they should also be consulted. Family matters may be best resolved by taking into consideration the opinion of all adults. As for issues concerning a tribe or professional fraternity or town or city, if all relevant people cannot be consulted, their representatives should settle matters in an acceptable manner. The affairs of the state should be decided by the head of the state, who should be appointed by the consent of all. He should draw upon the suggestions of truly representative advisors. He should hold office only for as long as he enjoys the confidence of his people. An honest, pious person cannot aspire or try to cling to his office if he forfeits without having the confidence of the public. Nor can he ever resort to fraudulent practices to keep occupying his office by force and coerce people into pledging their allegiance to him. He should not pick advisors who simply suit him. Rather, they should be independently minded, sincere people who are trusted by others. Only a dishonest person has recourse to unfair means. He may put up a facade of mutual consultation while he acts totally against its spirit. By so doing, he tries to deceive both God and the public. Needless to add, God cannot be deceived, nor can the public be so misguided that they will fail to discern his misappropriations or accept him at his face value. In terms of its nature and essence, the Quranic directive for mutual consultation calls for the following. 1. People should enjoy full freedom of expression in matters concerning their rights and interests. They should be fully informed as regards how their affairs are decided. People should also be free to check the performance of those who hold the reins of responsibility and to admonish them if they commit lapses. They should also be authorized to replace their rulers if the latter do not mend their ways. It is the height of injustice and deceit to gag and coerce people and keep them in the dark. Such malpractices are grossly contrary to the spirit of mutual consultation. 2. People entrusted with running collective affairs should be appointed with the consent of the people. Their consent should be free and independent. Any public consent, if secured fraudulently or forcibly, or if it is bought by money, is no consent at all. Anyone who uses any of those unfair means is not fit to be the head of the state. Only he who is selected willingly by the public is entitled to this position. 3. That the ruler should appoint only those people to advise him who enjoy public confidence. Those who appropriate this position for themselves by coercion, money, falsehood, deceit, or misguiding people cannot be called their representatives. 4. That those who are consulted should express their views to the best of their knowledge and in consonance with their conscience. They should be free to state their views clearly. If they are compelled into giving opinions which are against their conscience, owing to any pressure, fear, or incentive, or because of group identity, it amounts to treachery, which runs counter to the underlying spirit of mutual consultation. 5. That the opinion arrived at by consensus or majority vote of the consultative assembly should be accepted. 4. If one acts in total disregard of the consultation offered, it renders the whole process useless. The Quran categorically states that mutual consultation should be the basis of running public affairs. The consensus or majority view should therefore be the deciding factor. God not only directs Muslims that consultation be carried out in their affairs, but we find this as an observation about Muslim communal life that their mutual affairs are settled by consultation. It is, therefore, necessary that the suggestions enjoying public support be carried out. It should be clear that the above mechanism of consultation is not characterized by absolute power and authority in terms of deciding the affairs of the Muslim community. Consultation is confined to the limits fixed by God's law. The standing principle is that it is God who decides matters on which Muslims have disagreements. Muslims are, therefore, obliged to turn in the first place to God and His Messenger in all their affairs. Going by this important proviso, it should be clearly understood that Muslims may carry out consultation after ascertaining the thrust and implications of a divine command. However, they cannot overrule or alter what has already been decided by God and His Messenger.
And spend out of what we have bestowed upon them.
This carries the following three meanings. 1. That they spend out of the sustenance granted to them by God. That they do not turn to unlawful earnings to meet their expenses. 2. That they do not hoard the sustenance bestowed on them by God. Rather, they feel no inhibition in spending it. 3. That they also spend of what is granted to them in God's cause. They do not keep it exclusively for their own use. The Quran brands only lawful, wholesome sustenance as that which is bestowed by God. What is grabbed unlawfully does not represent the sustenance bestowed upon a person by God. Moreover, the sustenance bestowed by God should be expended rather than stingily retained for one's strictly personal use. The Quranic directive to spend also covers one's expenditure in the cause of God. Those who spend along the above lines will receive ample reward in the hereafter for spending out of what God had bestowed on them.
والذين إذا أصابهم البغي هم ينتصرون.
Who, when a wrong is done to them, seek its redress. Who, when a wrong is done to them, seek its redress.
This is also another excellent quality of believers. They are not easy prey for tyrants and oppressors. If they are tender-hearted and of forgiving disposition, then this is not because of their weakness, for they have not been trained to live with the abject meekness of hermits and world-renouncing recluses. Such is their character, that if those who are weaker than them commit an excess against them, they are likely to gracefully wink at it. On the contrary, if a power-drunk and arrogant person engages in high-handedness, they are wont to stand up and resist and prove their mettle. For the proud and the haughty, believers have proved a hard nut to crack.
وَجَزَاءُ سَيِّئَةٍ سَيِّئَةٌ مِثْلُهَا فَمَنْ عَفَى وَأَصْلَحَ فَأَجْرُهُ عَلَى اللَّهِ إِنَّهُ لَا يُحِبُّ الظَّالِمِينَ
The recompense of evil is evil the like of it. But he who forgives and makes amends, his reward lies with Allah. Surely, he does not love the wrongdoers.
The recompense of evil.
From here on till verse 43, the import of the preceding verse is elaborated.
Is evil the like of it?
This is the first basic rule that must be observed in taking revenge, whereby a person may not exceed the extent of wrong done to him.
But he who forgives and makes amends, his reward lies with Allah.
This is the second rule that ought to be taken into account. While one is entitled to take revenge against the wrongdoer, it is better to pardon him wherever this can bring about reform. Now, since pardoning another person mortifies a person's own feelings, God consecrates a reward for him because he suppressed his own feelings for the reform of evildoers.
Surely, he does not love the wrongdoers.
This warning alludes to a third rule. While taking revenge, a person should be careful lest he become a tyrant himself. It is not permissible to exceed the original wrong in extracting revenge. For example, one may slap only once in retaliation for one slap. One is not permitted to go beyond the hurt sustained by oneself. Likewise, it is not permissible to commit a sin by way of revenge for the sin committed against oneself. For example, if a wicked person kills someone's son, the father is not authorized to kill the son of that person by way of revenge. Nor is one allowed to rape the daughter or sister of a rapist to take revenge for that kind of wrong.
وَلَمَنِ انتَصَرَ بَعْدَ ظُلْمِهِ فَأُولَٰئِكَ مَا عَلَيْهِمْ مِنْ سَبِيلٍ
There is no blame against him who avenges himself after he has been wronged.
إنما السبيل على الذين يظلمون الناس ويبغون في الأرض بغير الحق أولئك لهم عذاب أليم
Blame attaches only to those who subject people to wrong and commit excesses on earth. A painful chastisement awaits them.
وَلَمَنْ صَبَرَ وَغَفَرَ إِنَّ ذَٰلِكَ لَمِنْ عَزْمِ الْأُمُورِ
But he who patiently endures and forgives, that is a conduct of great resolve.
But he who patiently endures and forgives, that is a conduct of great resolve.
It is pertinent to clarify that all these qualities of believers characterized the conduct of the Prophet's companions. The Meccan unbelievers saw all this at first hand. God thus instructs the Meccan unbelievers that if they have received some wealth from God for their ephemeral life, they should not cause them to be unduly puffed up and lose their heads. They should also bear in mind that this is not true wealth. True wealth consists of those good qualities and characteristics which the Quran has cultivated in believers who belong to their own community.